Do you have a strong sense of self?
Because if you do, you're actually less likely to join a cult.
Right. Which is wild to think about. But today we are doing a deep dive into this incredibly fascinating article.
An audio guide, yeah.
Yeah, an audio guide by Clint Matheny. It's called The Integration of Self from his site, A Toolbox for Emotional Health. And, our mission today is really to guide you through a completely new way of visualizing your identity.
It's very different from how we normally think about it.
Exactly. We're going to figure out exactly where the different parts of your identity physically live, like whether they're actually inside your body or outside of it.
Which sounds a bit strange at first.
It does. But we'll get into how mapping those locations directly dictates your emotional health. And, well, going back to the start, your vulnerability to outside influence.
It's a really profound framework, honestly. And because this is such a like a spatial, intensely visual exercise, I highly recommend that you mentally grab a pen and paper right now.
Oh, definitely.
Matheny suggests this directly in his text. As we explore these concepts, mapping out where your own identity parts are located is just crucial. I mean, it might feel a bit abstract at first,
Yeah, kind of weird.
right? But the insights you gain into becoming, whole and complete are genuinely transformative.
Okay, so let's unpack this because the core premise here is, well, it's startling. We usually think of words like I or you as just grammar,
And invisible language.
Exactly, invisible language that we just use to communicate. But Matheny's whole work is based on the idea that these words, these identity concepts, they have actual tangible physical locations in relation to our bodies.
And that right there is the foundational shift in perspective we really need to establish. He breaks our identity down into very specific, discrete parts.
Right.
So there's the you, the I, the me, the myself, and then there's your name, your nickname, and your spirit.
That's a lot of parts.
It is. And according to this framework, none of these are just, abstract concepts floating out in the ether. They reside somewhere in space.
And the origin of this entire approach, it comes from this story he shares from, I think 30 years ago.
Yeah, 30 years.
He was in a therapy session with a client, and this client made this incredibly restrictive request.
Which you don't hear often in therapy.
No, not at all. He asked Matheny to completely stop using the word you when asking him questions.
And Matheny was naturally curious about such a specific boundary. I mean, instead of just nodding and agreeing, he investigated.
Like any good therapist would.
Right. He asked the client, when I say the word you, where is your you? Like, is it inside or outside of your body? And the client answered without even a second of hesitation.
He just said it.
He said, it's in my stomach.
Okay, I have to stop you there
Okay, please
because
don't.
it sounds completely bizarre. I mean, are we really saying a pronoun literally lives in gastric tissue? Because I'm having a really hard time buying that a concept of language can be physically trapped in an organ. I know the text mentions this client had been physically abused as a child and had this metaphorical boot in his stomach.
Yes.
But what is the actual mechanism there? Like, how does a past physical trauma trap a word in someone's gut?
It's a completely fair pushback. I mean, we aren't talking about a dictionary definition taking up physical mass in the digestive tract.
Okay,
We're
right.
talking about the brain's neurobiological mapping of trauma. So think about the environment of childhood abuse. The abuser is highly likely to be pointing, yelling, and directing their rage using that specific
Oh,
pronoun.
like, look what you did.
Exactly. Or, I'm going to teach you a lesson. The child's developing brain is experiencing severe physical pain in their stomach while simultaneously hearing the word you hurled at them like a weapon.
Oh, wow. So the brain just wires those two things together.
The brain creates an unbreakable associative link. The word you becomes the trigger, and the searing pain in the stomach is the response.
That makes so much sense.
Right. So years later, when Matheny simply asks a conversational question using the word you, the client's nervous system isn't hearing a pronoun, it is feeling the physiological memory of that abuse.
Because the identity part of you is just inextricably anchored to the site of the trauma.
Exactly.
But, if that trauma is so tightly bound to the stomach in that specific case, it makes me wonder about the mechanics of how these parts move around in general. Because a kid isn't born with their identity parts scattered all over the place or trapped.
No, they're not.
So what is the actual catalyst that pushes an identity part completely outside of the body?
It almost always traces back to the sheer overwhelming nature of childhood. And it is entirely a mechanism of protection.
Protection, okay.
Yeah. When a caregiver is angry, their language is pointed. As we just discussed, the word you carries the derogatory weight, you know, the anger, the blame.
It's the target.
It is. And for a young child whose sense of self is incredibly fragile, absorbing that anger directly into their core identity is psychically devastating. It's just, it's too much voltage for the system to handle.
So the system has to trip a circuit breaker.
Or perform a brilliant spatial maneuver. The mind disassociates. It takes the concept of you, the exact part being targeted by the adult's anger, and pushes it physically outside of the body's boundary.
Wow.
By creating spatial distance, the mind creates emotional distance. The anger still lands, but it doesn't land inside.
Oh, man. It's like putting your mailbox out at the end of a really long driveway.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. Because the junk mail, the bills, the hate mail, they all still get delivered by the post office. You still have to deal with them eventually. But they don't actually get inside your house. You don't have to live with that toxic mess just sitting on your living room coffee table.
That is spot on. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, you can see how this external you, this mailbox at the end of the driveway, it creates a remarkably powerful shield throughout a person's entire adult life.
How so?
Well, if your you is located 3 feet outside of your body, you are likely someone who handles criticism incredibly well.
Because it's not hitting them.
Right. When a boss yells at you or a stranger insults you, they are attacking the mailbox. The attack simply isn't penetrating your core internal self. You can observe the insult almost objectively.
It just bounces off the armor.
Yes.
And the text actually gives some radical advice regarding this. Matheny says that if you are listening to this right now and you check in with yourself and realize your you is currently inside your body and it's bringing up heavy, unpleasant feelings.
He recommends deliberately kicking it out.
Yeah. He suggests visualizing pushing it about 3 feet away or even further, which is kind of wild for a therapy technique.
But he recognizes the profound protective utility of an external you. I mean, if that part of your identity is currently internal and it's carrying the cumulative weight of past derogatory statements.
Keeping it inside is just torturing yourself.
Exactly. You're carrying unnecessary pain. Pushing it out provides immediate, tangible relief. It allows you to breathe.
But there has to be an inherent flaw in building a fortress, right?
Always.
A fortress is fantastic when you are under siege. But the walls that keep the arrows out are the exact same walls that keep everything else out.
And that is the tragic, unintended consequence of this protective disassociation. The armor doesn't have the cognitive ability to discriminate between an attack and an embrace.
It's just a wall.
It just blocks everything directed at the word you.
And here's where it gets really interesting in Matheny's work. Let's say your you is outside your body, acting as that shield. And a partner looks deeply into your eyes and says, I love you.
Yeah.
According to the mechanics of this framework, what actually happens?
Well, the phrase, I love you, travels through the air and hits the external you sitting out by the mailbox.
It never reaches the house.
The affection is intercepted. The person being spoken to will register the statement logically, like they know their partner loves them, but they won't fully resonate with it kinesthetically.
Wait, kinesthetically, meaning they physically will not feel the sensation of love in their body, like the warmth, the butterfly feeling, the groundedness.
They'll feel a fraction of it or perhaps nothing at all.
Wow.
Because kinesthetic refers to the physical feeling, the embodied sensation of an emotion. And because the word you was the target of the sentence, and the you is located outside the physical body.
The emotional payload detonates outside the body.
Exactly. The core self remains completely untouched by the affection.
That is incredibly heartbreaking. I mean, to be in a loving relationship, to have someone declare their devotion, and you literally cannot absorb the feeling because a survival mechanism you built when you were 6 years old caught the pronoun before it could get through the front door.
It's sad, but it explains a massive amount of relationship friction. People often go to therapy feeling broken because they have wonderful partners, but feel this persistent, hollow emptiness.
They think they're incapable of receiving love.
Yes. But Matheny offers a brilliant, intensely practical workaround for this, drawn directly from his own marriage.
Right. The story about his wife, Lori.
Matheny is deeply aware that his wife, Lori's you, is located outside of her body. He knows that if he simply says, I love you, the emotional weight of that statement will be blocked by her external armor.
So what does he do?
He deliberately alters his phrasing. He says, I love you, Lori.
He just appends her first name to the end of the sentence.
Just that simple addition.
But why does that change the physics of the interaction? Like, why does adding a name suddenly bypass this heavy lifelong armor?
Through decades of questioning clients about their mental floor plans, Matheny found a very consistent pattern.
Okay.
While the you is almost universally targeted by angry caregivers and pushed outside for protection, our first names are treated differently.
Really?
Yeah. Even when scolded, the piercing blame usually lands squarely on the you. As a result, our first names are almost always kept safely tucked inside our bodies. The first name remains an internalized core component of our identity.
Oh. So by saying, "I love you, Lori," he is sending a package to the mailbox, but then adding a VIP access code that routes it directly into the house.
That is a perfect visualization, yes.
The you catches the grammatical structure of the sentence, but the Lori grabs the emotional feeling and pulls it straight inside.
The addition of the internal identity part acts as a bridge. It allows the pleasant feelings to bypass the disassociated you and be experienced kinesthetically inside the body where they belong.
I love that. And if you're sitting at home right now or driving your car, I highly recommend trying this.
Oh, absolutely.
The text specifically prompts this experiment. Have a loved one, a partner, a close friend, a family member say, "I love you" to you. Just those three words. Close your eyes and notice how it feels physically in your chest or your stomach.
Pay attention to your body.
Yeah. Then have them say, "I love you," followed immediately by your first name, and pay attention to whether the physical sensation changes. Does it feel deeper, warmer, more real?
It's a remarkably quick way to start mapping where your own parts might be residing.
It really is.
And it perfectly highlights the functional differences between our identity parts. I mean, we've established that having your you outside the body can be highly beneficial for deflecting criticism.
The armor.
But that rule absolutely does not apply across the board. The framework treats the I with entirely different rules.
Yeah, the I is a completely different animal. You can leave the you in the yard all day, but Matheny is adamant about the I.
He is. According to Matheny's clinical experience, it is absolutely non-negotiable that your I is located inside your body.
What is the mechanism there, though? Like, what breaks if your I is hanging out next to the mailbox with your you?
If your I is outside your body, you are going to experience a profound chronic struggle with motivation, discipline, and self-direction. Think about the mechanics of internal dialogue. When you are trying to motivate yourself, you use the I. You say, "I want to start that new business," or "I need to get up and go for a run."
But if the I is disconnected, those statements just evaporate.
Because there is no kinetic energy behind them.
Right.
Abstract thought requires physical, emotional energy to translate into physical action.
Right.
If the I is outside your physical form, the statement, "I want to," lacks the internal spark necessary to initiate movement. It remains a purely intellectual concept.
So your brain understands the goal,
but your body feels absolutely no drive to execute it.
Let me build on that. Because if the you is our armor, then the I is our engine.
I like that.
If your engine is sitting out in the garage, disconnected from the chassis of the car, you can sit in the driver's seat and turn the key all you want.
You're not going anywhere.
Exactly. You can turn on the radio, you can steer the wheel, you can visualize driving to the beach, but the car isn't going to move an inch. The abstract desire to drive cannot bypass the physical reality of a missing engine. You need the eye inside the car.
And what's fascinating here is how perfectly that engine analogy explains the modern epidemic of procrastination and executive dysfunction.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Right. People beat themselves up, thinking they're lazy or lack willpower. They read productivity books and try to force themselves to move. But if your eye is sitting out in the garage, no amount of willpower will work.
It's physically impossible.
A disconnected eye guarantees a stagnant life, regardless of how intensely you logically desire to achieve your goals.
So how do we put the engine back in the car? I mean, if someone is listening to this and realizes their I or their me or their spirit is scattered out on the lawn, how do we physically bring them back inside the house?
Matheny provides a highly specific yet remarkably gentle solution. On his site, he offers targeted audio prompts.
Okay.
These are carefully constructed recordings designed to literally invite the I, the me, the myself, the names, and the spirit back inside the body.
I need to understand the how here, though. How does a simple audio recording move a mental block that might have been there for decades? Is it like a form of hypnosis?
It's not magic, and it's not hypnosis in the stage show sense. It is a form of guided neurological reassociation.
Okay, what does that mean?
The prompts are designed to lower the brain's defensive barriers. By calmly, repetitively inviting the part back, the audio signals to the subconscious that the current environment is finally safe.
Got it.
It provides the nervous system with permission to drop the spatial defense mechanism and pull the part back in. And very often, because the mind inherently craves integration, these identity parts are eager to return once the invitation is extended in a safe context.
But Matheny includes a massive caveat to this process, a very strict rule that you cannot break.
Yes. This is perhaps the most crucial element of his entire methodology. When you are listening to these prompts and inviting these parts back inside, if an identity part refuses to come back.
Which happens, right?
It does. If you visualize inviting your eye in and it stubbornly stays outside, you must honor that refusal. You absolutely cannot use mental force to drag it back.
See, my instinct would be to fight that. If I know my engine needs to be in the car for my life to work, shouldn't I be doing everything in my power to force it back under the hood?
No, because that refusal is critical diagnostic information.
Mm-hmm.
If a part refuses to come back, it is communicating with you.
It's telling you something's wrong.
Exactly.
Mm.
It means that specific part is currently holding on to heavy, unaddressed trauma. It is staying outside because it looks at your internal emotional environment and determines that it is not yet safe to return.
Mm.
Or the part itself is too wounded to be reintegrated without causing a systemic shock.
Oh, wow. It's like the client with the trauma in his stomach. If you try to force the part back in before the wound is cleaned out, you're just going to aggravate the injury.
Precisely.
You are basically re-traumatizing yourself in the name of healing.
Healing must be collaborative, not coercive. You have to wait until the underlying fear or trauma is addressed before that part will willingly walk through the front door.
Man. So what does this all mean? Let's bring this full circle. We started this deep dive with a pretty intense hook about cults.
We did.
And now that we understand the mechanics of the I and the you, that connection makes terrifying sense.
It really illuminates the exact psychological vulnerability that predatory groups exploit.
Right. Because if your identity parts are scattered, if your I is out in the yard and your me is down the street, you have a hollow core. You lack internal direction and kinetic energy.
You're stalled out.
Yeah. And cults do not look for people with strong, integrated internal engines. They look for people whose eye is sitting out in the garage. Because if you don't have an internal eye telling you what to do, what to value, and how to act.
A cult leader is more than happy to step into that void and provide an external eye for you.
They become your engine.
Exactly.
So mapping these identity parts, figuring out exactly where they live, and inviting them back inside isn't just some, you know, interesting psychological parlor trick. It is a tangible, highly practical mechanism for rebuilding your core defenses.
Mm-hmm.
It is how you seal the cracks in your foundation so that no one else can pour their influence into you.
It fundamentally changes how we view resilience.
It really does.
And this raises an important question about our cultural approach to emotional healing. True emotional health isn't about white-knuckling your way through life. It isn't about reading another self-help book and trying to force toxic positivity onto a fractured foundation.
No.
It's about learning to respectfully, quietly communicate with the parts of yourself that have spent decades just trying to keep you safe. If your you is outside, instead of being frustrated by it, you should probably thank it for taking the hits for all those years.
Wow, yeah.
And if your eye refuses to come in, you respect its boundaries until you can do the deeper work to address the root fear.
You know, we usually think of language as just a tool we use to describe our reality to other people. But based on Matheny's framework, I want to leave you with this to chew on.
Okay.
Could it be that the specific pronouns we use internally aren't just describing our reality, but are literally constructing the physical boundaries of where our trauma lives?
That's a deep thought.
Like, is your grammar dictating your emotional capacity?
It completely redefines the weight of the words we use. They are coordinates on a map we didn't even know we were drawing.
So the next time someone tells you exactly who they are or where their pain is located, believe them, even if they tell you a pronoun is trapped in their stomach.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We hope you take some quiet time this week to check in with your I, see where your you is hanging out, and maybe try that first name access code with someone you love. Until next time, take care of yourself and all of your parts.